Chapter 6. Daryl likes being behind the wheel again, even if this wreck of a jalopy is beneath his standards. It's a Ford. He never liked a Ford. Always preferred a Chevy if he was not driving a town car. That vagrant hawk probably had so many outstanding warrants against him, he'll think twice about reporting his vehicle stolen. But you can never be sure how these wackadoodles think. All a mentally healthy man like Daryl can do is concentrate on promised pussy, and he sure as hell hopes that's what's waiting for him at Poppy's. Help! He thinks he hears a voice call in some kind of pre-recorded announcement from inside the dashboard. How could that be? Was it some kind of Bluetooth issue? A GPS malfunction? He's surprised there even is a satellite system in this crap wagon, but there she blows, right there on the floor where you can't even see it properly. He should be the one recording these directional voices. "Go left, asshole," his version would say. "Ha! Turn around, scumbag!" Just imagine the driver's reaction. "In 300 feet, kill yourself!" He could make a fortune with this funny shit. "Help!" he hears again. But wait a minute. Is it coming from beneath his car seat? He looks down and sees his impaired dick is stirring in his pants. Hey, that's a good sign. Maybe. But where is that squeaky voice coming from? "Let me out," he hears, and this time he knows for sure it's coming from his Peter. Is he losing it? His crotch moves again painfully, more aggressively, as if it had only one shot to be heard. Looney Tune time or what? But yes, he just heard his own penis talking to him. He fumbles with his zipper, swerving back and forth between two lanes. Hey, he better be careful. Suppose his own tool started babbling to the cops. Poppy swerves the bouncy van up to the front door of her clandestine jumping center in full fury. The driver's seat has been customized so that she can bounce in place while driving, sort of like an adult version of a child's bouncy chair that usually doesn't attract much attention, yet lets her feel that up-and-down motion she requires in her daily life. But today she couldn't care less if the neighbors see. She's never been this pissed. She looks both ways for the dreaded process servers and honks the horn to signal all is clear. Volta opens the door, jumping in place, as is the whole gang behind her. This is war. Marcia Sprinkle must die. Poppy hops the whole van up and down in lowrider non-cholo solo fury, still proud that she figured out all by herself how to install the hydraulic lift kits to each wheel that allows the vehicle to jump as high as 4 feet. Bouncy bouncers rush out, militantly chanting a cover version of that classic rap song, Jump Around, by House of Pain, which Springboard Sam and Doubleback Barbara have reimagined as a bluegrass call to arms. Campolina even adds a fierce falsetto horse braying sound effect from atop a pogo stick she sometimes uses as a mode of travel when she's feeling more theatrical than usual. "Shotgun," yells Volta, and at first some of the jumpers are confused, thinking Poppy might be so angry at her mother that she is arming her followers. But then they realize Volta's claiming seniority seating here at Bouncy Bouncy. The entire back of the van has been stripped and the cushions have been replaced with wall-to-wall mini-tramps that allow the passengers to feel the emotional comforts of extreme up-and-down movements. Volta gets the springiest one up front, right next to Poppy. And yes, she's a little tall for this privilege, but even today, filled with rage, she remembers to dip her head each time she propels herself upward. Poppy peels out. The springs of the vehicle, never allowed to wear, keep the suspension system in tip-top form so the wheels of the van move up and down excessively. Many riders might find this uncomfortable, but the bouncy bouncers would never complain. In fact, their minibus launches upward and lands back down in a vibrating bounce. "We'll sit still when we're dead, Marcia Sprinkle." Marcia has never lowered herself by being on the grounds of a 7-Eleven store in her life, but today she just might have to break her own rule. That Volvo was too hot to drive to New York, and besides, Poppy and her gang are surely on her trail already. She has to blend in. Oh, thank heaven. There's the perfect mark, a family getting back in their car, which must surely be refinanced within an inch of its axles. dork knob dad with his baseball hat on backwards. What difference could it possibly make what it said on the front? She knows how unremarkable the phrase he is trying to communicate must be, so she refuses to put the letters together to spell it out in her head. Mom is already used up. You can tell having children has cursed her forever. Why isn't she striking out at her own mother for allowing this to happen, like Marcia was about to do to hers? Must mothers raise their daughters only to be violated by men's fingers, tongues, and penises? This must stop. Now. And those kids, somebody in this whole wide world might think these identical white twins are cute, but Marcia is not one of them. Dressed in some sort of matching Walmart tracksuits with the pants worn sliding down, these 8-year-old boys, the mother actually tells her their age later as if this is a fascinating fact, are already imitating the gangster look. Marcia does not appreciate the sight of their Dollar Tree boxer shorts, much less their preteen plumber's cracks. "Bernie, help me with a bag," she hears the mother shout to one of them in an accent that sounds part Philadelphian and part Baltimorean, if you can imagine such a thing. What could these people have possibly bought? Slim Jims? Fish sticks? One thing she knows for sure, there are none of the fancy crackers she's craving anywhere on the shelves of this goddamn place. "Barney, put the sodas in the truck," she hears Dad order. Barney. She heard it with her own ears. Bernie and Barney. Good God. And the delivering doctor didn't call Child Services to report this name abuse? And sodas. Such an uncivilized word for soft drinks. The word they used to use for Coca-Cola in Dutch Village. Not only ugly, but incorrect. Soda is carbonated water, not a sugary cola. Does anyone speak English around here? "Excuse me," Marcia says in her best victim voice. "Could you give me a ride to the bus station? I was just carjacked." "What?" blurts the mom in confusion and the usual fear Baltimoreans of a certain age always feel. "Have you called the police?" Dad asks with some suspicion. "Yes, of course," Marcia answers stoically. "They did the report, but they're so understaffed these days." "It's just what Baltimore is like now," explains Mom, her natural skepticism melting slightly. "Did they have a gun?" pipes in Barney without the slightest concern that she might have been traumatized. "Yes, they did," Marcia responds, careful not to sound too dramatic. "I have no idea of what kind, though. I just froze when I saw the one they pointed at me." "You're lucky they didn't shoot you," Dad announces. "If they had, you'd be dead," cries out Barney, obviously the less intelligent of the twins. "Bernie, what a terrible thing to say," scolds Mom in embarrassment. "That's fine, son," Marcia answers. "You're right. I'm lucky to be alive with you nice people."
"Seems like the police could have given you some kind of lift," reasons Dad, still unsure.
"Oh, I asked them," explains Marcia, "but they said regulations are much stricter these days, and now they aren't allowed to give anybody a ride." "Bus station do you want to go to?" asks Mom, warming up to Marcia's lies. "The bargain budget bus is the only one that takes cash," Marcia explains in faux panic, knowing they also don't even ask for ID.
"I know where it is," Dad snorts, "across the street from the old Dundalk bus terminal."
"The bargain budget buses don't even have a real station," Marcia sputters sadly.
"No kidding," replies Mom. "They just pick you up in the parking lot across the street from McDonald's like day laborers."
"Hop in," says Dad, suddenly the Good Samaritan. "We'll take you," agrees Mom, with that Hun-like kindness many Baltimore women affect.
"Sit up front," wails Bernie.
"Yeah, keep your cooties to yourself," adds Barney, with a smugness Marcia will make him regret.
"Boys," yells Mom as she climbs in the back seat with them. "Where are your manners?"
"In the trash can of breeding," thinks Marcia as she hops in the front passenger seat next to Dad, a position in a vehicle she is unused to from being chauffeured everywhere by Daryl.
Daryl. Thank God he's gone. Him and his filthy boner. She hopes they're both sitting in jail somewhere. Dad pulls off. Marcia buckles her seatbelt as the two little heathens in the back seat squirm on either side of their overly protective mom.
Imagine these two future hopheads as babies, sucking greedily on this unremarkable woman's breasts. Marcia has never allowed her own daughter, Poppy, to put her germ-filled lips on her grotesquely swollen by nature nipples. Maybe that is why the child had sucked her thumb until she was 14 years old. How should she know? She's not Dr. Phil, is she? Besides, sucking her thumb is better than sucking a dick, isn't it? Just the thought of such oral invasion inspires Marcia's tongue to move in another lie. "Did you hear the awful news?" she suddenly asks, turning to the dullards in the back seat as Dad pulls off exit 35A toward Golden Ring Mall. "What?" asks the mother, suddenly scared. "The Jonas brothers were all killed in a terrible tour bus accident last night." Bernie lets out a shriek of disbelief that sounds like it is coming from a wild animal. "No," wails Barney before breaking into loud sobs of grief. "That's awful," cries Mom as she puts both arms around her dim-witted sons in a futile act of comfort. "Is that true?" shouts Dad over the howling of his horrified children as he slows down at the fork of Boston and O'Donnell Streets. "Oh, yes," answers Marcia, feigning sorrow. "I heard it on three different news reports. Joe Jonas was beheaded." Barney lets out another deafening cry of anguish from deep inside his childhood soul as Bernie begins shaking in spasms of blubbering grief. "And the other one, what's his name?" Marcia asks nonchalantly. "Nick," both the boys shout in unison through a torrent of tears. "Yes, that's him," Marcia continues. "He was thrown from the car and run over by a tractor trailer." Both children are just speechless, but after the new details sink in, they let out a fresh howl of horror. "Okay, okay, that's enough," orders Dad, much too late. "They don't need to hear any more." "Kevin lived for a while after the accident," Marcia tries to explain in phony concern, "but he died later in the hospital from a massive brain hemorrhage." "Enough, enough," yells Mom as the boys dissolve into a quivering pile of blubbering boyhood bereavement. "We're here," Dad announces loudly in relief, eager to get rid of this insensitive passenger at the O'Donnell Street bus pickup stop. "There's another waiting passenger," Mom points out, hoping to get Marcia out of their car as quickly as possible. "Thank you very much," Marcia coos with deceit as she exits their vehicle. But before Mom and Dad can sigh in relief, Marcia opens back up the front door and addresses the children in the rear. "You're too young to remember, but lots of other stars died in car accidents, too. James Dean, Jane Mansfield, even Princess Di was beheaded." The entire family freezes in disbelief until Dad snatches the door shut and peels out. Marcia can hear the children start to wail again as the car fades in the distance.